Movies and Booze on Moncrief.
Brought to you by Lidl's award-winning wine range. Lidl, more for you.
Enjoy alcohol sensibly. Visit drinkaware.ie.
And we do have a hashtag for this week's Movies and Booze based on an item we did earlier on in the week. It is OnlyFans movies. They are absolutely hilarious. There's millions of them on Twitter. I suggest you check them out. I will search desperately for one, even one I can read out within the next hour. And I'll do that if I possibly can. In the meantime, we are joined once again by Fionnuala Jones, Esther McCarthy and Dean McGuinness. Good afternoon to you all.
Hi, hello, Sean.
And Dean, what beers are we going to be talking about today?
Well, I'm on a crusade, Sean. I am trying to eradicate Dry January. I want it to stop forever. So in the spirit of that, what I'm doing is I've looked for the most indulgent things that I could bring on the show today. So we've got a hazelnut salted caramel imperial stout from Black Sheep Brewery. And then we've got a butterscotch sauce made from Longville House Irish Apple Brandy, which is made from Longville House Cider. So we've got all three of them to taste.
Mother of God. There would be kind of extra fattening.
Well, not so much fattening, but more satisfying.
Right. OK, but it is like drinking beer and eating cake at the same time from your description.
Yeah, we've got a dessert in a beer and then a cider in a dessert. Yeah,
right.
Absolutely.
Okay. Yeah, and have you ever tried Dry January, Dean?
I bought a running magazine 9 years, 4 months and 3 days ago, and I'll be talking about that. it was a significant moment in my life, and I feel that was enough for me. Dry January would be too much.
A treasured memory. I did try dry first week in January, and even I failed at that. Esther, are you doing Dry January?
No, sure. I don't even know what day it is, or let alone what month. So, no, absolutely not.
Right. Okay. So, the two films we have today, tell us about them.
There's one gem and one kind of head-scratchingly bad one, I suppose, this week. The gem is The White Tiger. I know there's a lot of anticipation and interest in this one because it's an adaptation of a Man Booker Prize winning novel that I think everyone read and really loved at the time. It was just one of those big, big films. And it's got Priyanka Chopra, Jonas, who's, you know, the queen of Bollywood has become a Hollywood star as well in her own right. She's really good in this, but the film is stolen by an actor I'd never heard of by the name of Adrash Gurav, who is just fantastic here as the central character, the narrator, who goes through this big, you know, tumultuous journey in his life. It's some performance. I mean, you're looking at it and you're going to Google this guy and go, who is this actor and what's he doing next? Because he is going to be a star. It's really great, I have to say.
Okay, you're talking up that one, all right. And so yeah. Stardust, why is it head-scratchingly bad?
Oh my God, because it takes a really interesting maverick of a musician at a really important point in his life where he's trying to break America. And, you know, he's well known in the UK, but he's not the star he came to be known as. That's David Bowie, of course. But it just takes that, you know, that this man is going to persist and throw all these interesting. He hasn't got a proper hit single yet in the meaning of the term in the early 70s, where you had to have a hit to drive an album. And, he, you know, he's this interesting man and this renegade, I suppose, and they've managed to make him really boring, Sean. Like, it's astonishingly bad, this one.
It doesn't feature any of his music, as I understand, either.
It doesn't feature any of his music. It was made without the blessing of his estate, and they tried to sidestep that by saying that he went to the US and didn't have a visa, so he couldn't perform. How convenient of them. So, I think they're trying to make something more interesting than the jukebox musicals we've seen recently along the lines of Bohemian Rhapsody. I think they're trying to make something more like Control, the biopic from about 10 years ago. But the filmmaking quality is not there. And there's another fundamental problem with this. Like, when David Bowie went to the States in the time that this film is set, which is in 1971, he was 24 years old, and the actor here playing him, Johnny Flynn, is 36. I'm sorry, it doesn't wash, you know, it doesn't convince, and you're just questioning it. I know this one caused a bit of consternation even when the trailer came out last year. Mm-hmm. And so it happens to be, and it just, yeah, it's not the movie Bowie deserves, let's put it that way.
Or anyone deserves, certainly from the sound of it. As I said, the hashtag is OnlyFansMovies, the Italian handjob being one example of that. Fionnuala Jones, good afternoon. How are you? Are you doing dry January?
Sean, my life is hard enough without inflicting that upon me. I need my flat white martinis too much.
Flat white martinis? Posh.
Yeah.
Okay.
Very posh.
Yeah. Well, actually, you might like the beers that Dean is talking about today. They're kind
of... Oh, he's all over like my two favourite activities, which are stout and eating cake. So I really cannot wait to hear about them.
All right. Okay, fantastic. Tell us about poor Ben Affleck, though. Things are not going well for him.
Jeez, poor Ben Affleck. Yeah, it was announced this week that he'd split with his girlfriend, Ana de Armas, who people might know from Knives Out. She's in the upcoming Bond movie, whenever the hell we're going to see that. Who knows at this point? No Time to Die. Plenty of time, apparently. But no time for the two of them. They have broken up. They started dating earlier last year when they were shooting the thriller Deep Water in New Orleans together. They star opposite each other as husband and wife. So naturally, they got together, as stars tend to do. And they've been very public with their romance, which has made them the subject of very intense media scrutiny throughout the pandemic. I think it's just given people something to talk about. They're flat out getting coffee, loads of PDAs. Quite bizarrely, there was a moment where, for whatever reason, who knows, they got a cardboard cutout of her, of Anna, for Ben's kids to play with in their garden when she wasn't there, when she was away working or whatever. He has kids with fellow actor Jennifer Garner. And now it's all over. And I don't know if you've seen in the media this week, but someone was photographed putting the cardboard cutout of Anna in the bin, which was very funny. You can imagine people went crazy over this. It was just so 2021. I mean, between this and Armie Hammer, it just gets better and better. A lot of people seem to think that it was his brother, Casey Affleck, also a fellow Academy Award winner. And he's actually come out and make a statement denying it, said it wasn't him. But anyway, apparently it's all very amicable. They're traveling a lot, whatever else. Anna doesn't want to be in Los Angeles, which is where Ben is based with the kids and whatever. So they're not together. But like, Deep Water is still due out at some stage this year. Again, that's all subject to change with the pandemic. I can't wait for the promotional tour around it. I'd say it's going to be mega awkward and very enjoyable for people like me to watch. Yeah,
a very weird thing, putting a cardboard cutout of her in the back garden anyway. Like,
it's just, it was, and like the kids are like really, again, you're judging this from paparazzi shots, but like they're really into it and like clearly having a lot of crack. I don't know. It's so strange, but to each their own. It's Hollyweird, as they say.
They were having a lot of crack, like maybe like beating it up or you know, playing, it on a seesaw and sitting on a swing and that kind of thing with them?
Honestly, I don't know. Like, moral of the story is don't, in the same way that you wouldn't get a tattoo of someone's name if you're going out with them, don't get a cardboard cutout of someone unless you're, it's a lifelong commitment, guys. It's a lifelong commitment.
Yeah, very strange. Right, so Dean, tell us about our first beer today.
Right, so the first one, Black Sheep Brewery in Massham in Yorkshire, they about 6-7 years ago, they set up a project called the Five Barrel Project. And it's a small experimental brewery that they've got within the old brewery. The brewery is a historic brewery in the town of Massham. And it's quite cool for beer geeks like me. They've designed the fermenters so that even though they're a fraction of the size of the large fermenters in the main brewery, they're the same height so that the liquid fluid interaction during fermentation is the same. It's got the same vertical distance, so the yeast has to travel over the same distance, so it behaves in the same way. They've been making these experimental beers. So when it comes to beer styles, there's three different kind of approaches that people can use. They can try to kind of get a general consensus as to what style should be and do that. They can look in history and see what a style used to be and try to do that. And then the third one is to try to create something that's completely unique. And that's what they've done with this hazelnut and salted caramel imperial stout. 7.2%. When you smell it, it smells like a delicious coffee cake. drinking it. It's like a frappuccino. It like when you smell it, it's a bit like going into a modern day coffee house. And there's layers of flavor on it: rich nutty hazelnut cappuccino. The salted caramel comes through in the taste. Caramel, burnt sugar, and it joins together with the coffee. It's kind of comes across like the icing on coffee cake. Touch of rum raisin, vanilla marshmallow coming through as well. Salt is unusual. There are some styles that have salt as a characteristic. There's a style called gose, which is quite salty. And when you drink it, it's unusual with a liquid to drink something and then to get that salty taste. They've got just enough salt in this so that you know that it's there and it provides that counterpoint to the caramel. And then the dark malts in the Imperial Stout come through and just give it an overall absolutely delicious taste. It's not something that you'd have 12 pints of. It's something that you'd kind of sit back and sip and enjoy. But in terms of eradicating Dry January, there's a few things that people need to take into account. First of all, alcohol consumption is down in Ireland. The figures have come out. We're down about 4.7% since COVID has kicked in. So
what?
There's been an awful lot.
It's down, yes, in Ireland. That's astonishing.
It's down. Yeah, there's been an awful lot in the media that, you know, people are buying so much in supermarkets and that all of this alcohol is being bought. What it is that the amount of drink that's being bought in supermarkets, it has increased. But it's an increase on 60% of the market. 40% of the market has disappeared for extended periods of time. Mm. So the 60% has gone up to about 95%, and the 40% has gone down to kind of 0%, you know, for periods of time. So we're down 5%. But the other thing that I think about Dry January is that it's achieving exactly the opposite of what it's trying to achieve. So the logic is that you say to yourself, I'm going to indulge at Christmas time and then I'm going to give up in January and that'll be really healthy. First of all, when you give up, if you compare people who don't drink to people who do drink, moderate drinkers have longer life expectancy than people who give up drink. So giving up drink isn't the best thing in the world to do.
Thank you, doctor. I thought the logic was just to give your liver a rest, you know, let it recuperate a bit.
If you were to consciously think, I am specifically not doing Dry January this year, that would provide you with the motivation not to overindulge at Christmas time. So I'm thinking that if people decide not to do Dry January, it achieves exactly what Dry January is setting out to achieve much better. So I think that that makes sense. And aside from
did
that,
you receive a Jesuit education by any chance, Dean?
Aside from that, I've got a philosophy of drink less, drink better.
Yes.
And what that means is that I need in my life, I need time to consider the drinks that I'm going to have. If I try to squash a whole pile of drinking into January and then make up for that in Christmas, that's taken away all of my thinking time. Whereas if I spread it out more evenly, then I've got thinking time in between so I can drink better and drink less. So it's definitely a philosophy.
Back to this particular beer, though, might it be a bit Marmite-y if you don't have a sweet tooth? If you prefer
beer? It's got a lot of flavors in it that sounds like they're really sweet flavors, but there's enough bitterness in the beer from the hops. There's enough dark malt roast acidity in it. It's a superbly well-balanced beer. And as well as that, one of the challenges that you've got in using hazelnut is that nuts have natural oils in them, and oils can be a disaster in beer. They can cause the head to collapse completely. They can kind of come across as just kind of an unpleasant flavor in beer, but they've done a superb job. They've done a special way of using hazelnut. They've used a kind of powdered hazelnut so that the oils from the hazelnut doesn't cause a problem. The balance is absolutely superb. It's like sometimes when you eat a coffee cake, it can, you know, not taste overly sweet, or like if you've got a carrot cake that you're getting kind of sweetness from the carrot, but it's a little bit less sweet than normal. It really well balanced. They have done a superb job on it. It's absolutely delicious.
Okay, Len has texted in, I assume agreeing with you. He's just texted in, yes, 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 Dean. I think Len might be having a good time by himself. What's that movie would you like to do first, Esther?
Let's do The White Tiger, Sean.
Okay, we're going to talk about The White Tiger after this break.
I learned the ways drivers cheat their masters.
Pass it up. Okay, take
it. Number one, give your master phony invoices. for repairs that are not necessary.
Thank you, sir.
Two, sell your master's petrol to other drivers. As you gain confidence, cruise around picking up and dropping off paying customers. Delhi has many pickup points. Over time, you will learn them all. When I looked at that cash, I didn't feel guilt. I felt rage.
That's the White Tiger there. So, Esther, obviously, is set in India?
It's set in India. I don't know. Have you read the book, Sean?
I don't think I have, no.
Okay, it was a bit of a sensation when it came out. It ended up winning. It's a guy called Arvind Adiga, and he's an Indian author, and he ended up winning the Man Booker Prize for it. And I think what people loved about the book is it's ostensibly this man's life story, but what it really is this kind of a scathing, dark, and sometimes wickedly funny account of the caste system in India. And, you know, broadening out from that, the class system that we experience all over the world. And it's told through the eyes of this boy. It's kind of told in flashback, which I don't usually like, but this is really good filmmaking here. There's a guy called Raman Barani, and he's done a really good job of kind of harnessing. There's a lot of drama in this film, like it could have gone so badly wrong. And it is trying, you know, it sets out its stall pretty early that it's trying to be epic in scale. Now, it is a little overstuffed towards the end. And I think it makes its point about greed a little too much instead of trusting its audience. So I would say that. And it tries to have three endings in the end as well, which tested me a little. But like so much of this is so good, I have to say. So the first scene before the film, it's set around 2007 in India, just before the economic meltdown took a hold, I suppose, and then told in flashback in the years afterwards. So we do know that this very impoverished boy, who's played by Ardesh Gurav, as I said, who's brilliant here. We do know he goes on to become a very successful man, and he is the White Tiger of the film. And in India, that phrase is the kind of unique one, the special one, the person, you know, the one that bucks the trend and manages to get out of the poverty trap that they're in. So that's who we're meeting here. And he's very slick looking. And we meet him as a younger man in the back of a car, where he is a driver for his boss, who is this ridiculously wealthy man by the name of Ashtuk, and his beautiful wife, who maybe has the best character name I've ever heard. Her name's Pinky Madam, and she's played by Priyanka Chopra Jonas. They seem to be having a great night until this kind of look of terror comes over their faces. And so you're hooked from the opening scene. It's great filmmaking. You don't know what's happened. And you have to wait till well into the film to discover what that is. So then you find out, you know, how he comes from this such a poor background. He's actually quite a clever boy. He's street smart. He's bright. He went to school, but he had to leave school because he has a big, you know, those big extended Indian families, including his grandmother, who is a supporting character here, Sean. She is a hoot. She is just this formidable woman, and I really want a special Oscar category of Best Supporting Granny to be made for her this year. She's brilliant in it, but a very domineering woman, and, you know, wants to set an arranged marriage for him, and wants to really have an important say in his life, whether he likes it or not. So he just feels kind of the walls closing in on him, and that he's going to be trapped in this poverty trap for his life, and he wants better for himself. And he's savvy, and he's capable of huge acts of selfishness as well, which we learn pretty much early in the film. So he's a bit of an anti-hero, this character. And he decides to take a job. He's kind of fascinated with this family that he encounters in his hometown one day, and they're back to the town, and they're fabulously wealthy and slick and glamorous, and he wants a bit of that, you know. So he tries to get a job as a driver for the family, and most of their wealth is built on tax evasion and bribing politicians, and he's at first he's this real, you know, this kind of real Asian tradition of servitude. He's almost like happy to bow and fawn and apologize for things that aren't his fault, until, and I don't want to give away too much here because it almost, the film's 2 hours long and it's almost exactly halfway through the film.
I was going to ask you, how long is this film?
Yeah. It's this kind of shocking realization for him of how, about how willing this family is to throw him under the bus, I suppose. And then he kind of undergoes this dramatic change, you know, and becomes this character he was always capable of being, and just sets out to get his own way and get what he wants, no matter what. And if he has to do awful things to his family, so be it. So, you know, I don't want to be the lazy movie reviewer who compares it to the other great Asian film of the last year, but there's so much of Parasite in this. It's got that scathing satire of wealth. It's got this man inveigling his way into a family of rich people, you know. So it's got all of that thematically. It's got all of that stuff going on as well. I would call it, you know, you forget how dark Slumdog Millionaire was at times, I suppose, and the sheer poverty that you get to see. But this is darker again. Mm. And it, you know, a touch of this and mixed with a bit of Parasite, and reminded me of a kind of an early 70s, maybe Scorsese crime thriller about how these people work their way up through the class system and how they will do. You know, it's pretty epic, this. I really liked it. And that performance from that actor, I mean, Ardash Gurav, I was just looking him up afterwards. I think it might be his first English language performance, though a lot of this film is in subtitles as well. But like, you're there going, in the way when we saw Colin Farrell in Tigerland and said, OK, that's the end of him in Ballykiss Angel. He's gone to the States. He's going to be a star. And in the way we maybe even saw Al Pacino in Dog Day Afternoon, or more particularly for me, I think, when you see Taher Rahim in Jacques Audier's great French film from about 10 years ago, Prophet, where he goes through that complete character transformation as well over the course of a very long film. That's what's happening here. And the risk with a characterization like that, I suppose, is that it can swamp the whole film because it's such a big performance. But he is just magnificent in it.
And a lot of people, a lot of people text in who love the book as well. Jonas says, I've seen White Tiger. I think the novel is better. The book is incredible. Couldn't put it down. I'm nervous to watch the film now. So there'll probably be a lot of debate around that over the.
I think this is really good filmmaking. And I mean, don't be expecting to get the exact book when you watch a film ever. Yeah, I think you have to let people be filmmakers as well.
Where can people see it, Esther?
There it is, sitting on your Netflix. You can watch it tonight.
Right.
And it's,
there you go.
It'll be up there among my favourites this year, I think I can say that safely already.
Dean was using his forked tongue argument to talk people out of Dry January. Michelle says, drink less, drink better. Brilliant. My new motto. Totally agree with your beer guy. January, the worst possible month to go dry, especially this January. After a fairly drowned December, I'm having a damp January, says somebody else on Twitter. Somebody else says, I usually give Dry January a go around the 29th of January. That's probably wise, you know, to rush into anything. And the beer that a lot of people are asking to repeat the name of the beer, it was a Black Sheep Salted Caramel Hazelnut Imperial Stout. Mother of God, it does have it all. A lot of people want to know, Dean, where can they get it?
That in the good independent off licenses, there's a very limited amount of it in the country. It's just an allocation of, I believe, about 30 or 40 cases has come into the country in total. So it's in Black Rock Cellars, who also is where I got the Longville House Apple Brandy. But if they go around to the specialist off licenses, that's the best bet.
Right, good stuff. The hashtag today is OnlyFansMovies. The hand that cradles the rocks being another example of that. You have to think about that one. Fionnuala, for people of a certain age, this is shocking news. You were telling us last week that Liam Neeson said he's not going to do any more action movies, but the direction he's going to take is truly shocking.
Yeah, this is a strange one, I think, is the best way to describe it. It seems like Liam Neeson is going for a full kind of pivot to comedy. they're looking at a remake of The Naked Gun. Now, at the minute, this is just kind of conversations, nothing confirmed. But Seth MacFarlane, who people know from Family Guy, he's looking to resurrect the series with Liam Neeson taking over the role of Frank Drebin, as we all know. Originally released in 1988 and was originally directed by David Zucker and starred Leslie Nielsen, obviously. A strange one, I don't know. And just based on what MacFarlane has done before with movies, this already stinks for me and it hasn't even happened. Mm. Basically, what Liam has said about it is, it'll either finish my career or bring it in another direction. I honestly don't know. Now, they have worked together before on A Million Ways to Die in the West. And I mean, in one way, I suppose Liam kind of doesn't have anything to lose at this point. He already has his reputation as an actor. He can kind of do these things and get away with it being a flop or not really being great. But I don't know. I'm very much of the opinion that we don't need to keep rebooting stuff or remaking stuff.
Just no.
There's enough original stories
just
to be told.
No.
No.
Yeah,
absolutely not.
Especially a classic. Don't be fecking with a classic. I mean, that's, you know. Plus also, now, Liam Neeson could do comedy, but he's not Frank Drebin. I mean, you might as well cast Liam Neeson as Martin Luther King. It'd be that bloody believable. Really, that's ridiculous. I'm outraged. We're kind of three quarters of a way through Movies and Booze. Dean, Esther and Fionnuala are with us. We've already talked about the movie The White Tiger, a black sheep, salted caramel, hazelnut, imperial stout from Dean, and the shocking news that Liam Neeson is going to try and be involved in a remake of the Naked Gun movies. I'm outraged, obviously, and hurt, understandably, because of all that. Jim on Twitter agrees with me, says, you're absolutely right to be shocked and appalled at the idea of Liam Neeson playing Frank Drebin. Why can't they just stop rebooting classics? Yeah, there are a few other people have a more sanguine view. Graham says, a few other people have made the same point. It might work. Sure, was Leslie Nielsen not a serious drama type actor before he got the role of Frank Drebin? Same with Lloyd Bridges in Airplane. That's true. Leslie Nielsen, I think, was in Forbidden Planet, which is a sci-fi classic, which was like a sci-fi reworking of The Tempest, I think it was. But I think with Lloyd Bridges was in kind of Airplane disaster movies before that. So he was kind of sending up the character he used to play. But yeah, fair enough. I still, you know, just put him some other comedy film. Phony McRingring says, I finally got around to Ma Rainey during the week. I thought it wasn't great. Viola Davis doing her usual Viola Davis Oscar bait thing, and Chadwick Boseman is very overrated. I know the guy died tragically young, but I'm sorry, that doesn't retrospectively make anyone a great actor, says Phony McRingring. What do you think, Esther, of that?
I hear now, Phony. I really liked it. I really liked it. I can maybe accept the argument Viola Davis is a performer who goes big or goes home, and if that's not your thing, that's fine, but I thought she was really great. But Chadwick, for me, that was a heartbreaking performance because it's kind of evident at that time that he wasn't well. And he almost leans into that terrible situation he was in as an actor. And he acts like his life is depending on it. And I thought he was superb in it, I have to say. And I would say he's a favourite for a posthumous Best Actor Oscar, or supporting, maybe. You could argue for him in either role. But I think you can see him get a posthumous Oscar, which is well earned from his performance in that film, I think.
Yeah. Jean has a question for Dean, who does beers. But Jean has asked a wine question. She says, I got a present of Jacob Creek Grenache Shiraz 2006. Is it drinkable, or can I assume that the giver doesn't like me? I enjoy the show, says Jean. Well, the basis on whether the giver doesn't like you, you have to base it on something else other than the wine. What have been your interactions over the years? Have you done anything to them that might be interpreted as some sort of hostile act? A 2006 Shiraz, open it and hope for the best. If not, you can clean lots of things with it. Why don't we move on to our second beer of the day, Dean?
Okay, so, and we're on to a kind of a combination of things here, and there's a nice story behind how I came across this. Before, we had a competition and we had a whiskey gift pack, and the winner of the whiskey gift pack runs an artisan food production company in a place which has one of the coolest address names ever that I've come across. It's Isle Farms in Oola. So it's Isle Oola, County Tipperary.
Okay.
And that's good for two reasons. First, it sounds absolutely beautiful. And second of all, when I'm doing loads and loads of research, drinking lots of alcohol, I can still pronounce it. So that's really cool. Now, they've made a butterscotch sauce, and got a bottle of it from them, and it is absolutely delicious. It's made with Longville House apple brandy. Longville have been making cider and apple brandy for over a decade now, and both products are Blas na Héireann award winners. The apple brandy, absolutely delicious, 40% ABV, incredibly smooth, lovely spice flavours coming through in it, white pepper, coriander, a little bit of bitter apple coming through, and there's some kind of nutty almond marzipan and vanilla notes in the apple brandy. The cider that comes from, it's a medium sweet apple cider made from apples from their own orchard. They have Michelin and Dabernay apples. And something that's very cool about the cider, they are making it without the addition of added sulfites. Sulfites are, it's a kind of a powdery substance that's put into wines and ciders, and it helps keep them incredibly fruity. You can have natural sulfites, which help to preserve the freshness of a cider. So you have natural sulfites in the cider, but no added sulfites whatsoever. So it really is an artisan product. And what's very cool about this trio of different taste experiences, when you combine them together, you get a phenomenon that in food pairing terms, it's called bridging. So the fact that the apple brandy is used in the butterscotch sauce means that you've got commonality between the two of them. And then when you taste the two of them together, the butterscotch sauce with the apple brandy, so the butterscotch sauce would typically be on an apple pie or with ice cream or something like that. The bridging shifts the balance of flavors, so it kind of accentuates the apple brandy, but then the apple brandy can mask itself in the butterscotch sauce, so you get a greater accentuation of the butterscotch. So it's a real nice flavor experience and well worth a thing. I would say a great time to be supporting Irish, but I actually disagree with that expression, because it's not supporting Irish, it's taking advantage of some absolutely amazing Irish products. And if you think that you're buying it because you want to support the company, that suggests that you're not getting benefit out of it by not buying it. You're losing out on the benefit. They are superb products, and they really, really do deserve to be tried.
Another cunning argument from Dean McGuinness. We'll move on to our second film of the day. We already know it's garbage. It's Stardust. Here's a clip anyway.
Any news on Rolling Stone?
I'm working on it.
I mean, you know best, of course, but perhaps there's a different way to talk about me when you're on the phone.
Okay.
I mean, maybe more people would want to meet me if you told them that I was a unique artist, say, who could fill the gap between Elvis and Dylan.
Elvis and Dylan. Gap. So, who do we got in there? Neil Young, James Taylor, Marvin Gaye, Leonard Cohen, The Ohio Players, The Doors, The Velvets, Creedence, Johnny Cash, Janis Joplin, Joni Mitchell, every artist on the Motown label.
I mean, a unique British artist.
Right, unique British artist. There aren't too many of those other than Led Zepp, Pink Floyd, Deep Purple, yes.
Yep. Right, okay. So a long list of people there, and David Bowie isn't on it. Right, so this isn't then a tour, Esther, that he conducts in the US. It's more like a publicity tour. Is that what it depicts?
Well, a lot of this actually isn't even factually based. It's a work of fiction. To remember this, first of all, I think if you're a real Bowie fan who knows a lot about this period, you're probably going to be shouting at the screen a bit. But what it purports to represent is a period in his life in 1971 when he toured the US in a bid to kind of build on his new album, I suppose, the man who new Wish album, The Man Who Sold the World, and how he was struggling as an artist at that time. Like, he was known in the UK, but not a megastar that he turned out to be. And he's trying to break America, as you were told you had to do, you know, of this time. You were never going to be an international star in the 1970s unless you did the big American tour and found your audience there. But America doesn't really know what to do with him, because he's just released a song called All the Madmen, and his management are calling it, like the US management are saying, it's too dark and too weird for the Yanks, basically. But what this film, first of all, in terms of storytelling, what it does that really annoyed me is it's not of its time, because everyone, every chance we get, someone tells us this guy's going to be huge. So it's really looking back. So you kind of don't believe the storyteller first and foremost, you know. And then another thing that didn't really happen is he, Ron Oberman, who's played by Mark Manier, was the head of publicity at Mercury Records, and Bowie did meet with him and work with him. But this film kind of sets them up as a kind of a, I don't know what they were trying to do really, like, I don't know, was it trying to be like Spinal Tap, but just setting them on this disastrous tour, kind of a road trip of a tour, as he tried to find this wonderfully strange persona that was Ziggy Stardust. And, you know, we're told about his influences, but as well, again, Bowie fans aren't getting anything new here. They know he was mad into mime, and he was a big, you know, he studied under Lindsay Kemp, who himself studied under Marcel Mousseau. You know, he gets to meet Mark Boland, who was a huge influence, and all. It, you know, it's just, if this was an item of clothing, it would be a beige cardigan, John, is all
right.
I'd say.
But it's set in 1971, and in that clip, your man quotes the Ohio Players as being some sort of big deal then. The Ohio Players had broken up and reformed and didn't have any notable hits until 2 years later.
Well, there you go. I think if there's only way to watch this film is to pick through the stuff that's wrong with it. And even like the costume design and stuff, like Johnny Flynn is too old. They make the character look camp rather than, you know, a maverick. And I tell you, when the big moment where he puts on, that, you know, you first see Ziggy in the wig and the hair, it looks like someone, a character out of Coronation Street. Like, there's just so much wrong with this.
So it's more impersonation rather than interpretation.
Yeah, and Johnny Flynn's a very charismatic actor. He was great in Beasts with Jesse Buckley, and I loved his Mr. Knightley in Emma last year, and he's got loads of stuff coming out. He's a very in-demand actor, and he's got, you know, he'll recover from this. I think this is a filmmaking problem rather than an actor's one, but really he's left at sea in playing such a, you know, a dynamic character.
Aaron says it's such a missed opportunity. Bowie pre-stardom is a really interesting period, which is a very good point. Somebody else
Absolutely.
Wants to know, is this bad enough to be sort of good?
No.
Okay. There's your one word answer there.
it's the one of the I see them so you don't have to.
Yeah. It's bad, and it sticks to that all the way through. Fionnuala, your last bit of gossip with us is Carey Mulligan and Britney Spears are in some lip action together.
Yes, the collaboration we never knew we needed. Carey is due to star in Promising Young Woman, which I think is out next month here. And there's a scene in the movie where she gets to lip sync with none other than Britney Spears.
Ah.
It's kind of funny, though, because they don't actually do a Britney song. They do a Paris Hilton song. But she's described it as this absolute bucket list thing. And there's a lot of buzz around the movie, around Carey's performance in particular. She's described the film itself as being kind of hard to explain. I would say if anyone's kind of thinking about it or intrigued about it, I would watch the trailer and you'll get the gist. But she's also said it's one of the best scripts she's ever worked with. I cannot wait to watch this. And especially now hearing about this scene, like, it's piqued all of my interests, including Britney Spears. So I'd love to see her do more movie stuff, referring to Britney, when she's a bit more mentally well. Because she's actually, when she's in stuff, she's done more TV stuff than anything. We won't talk about Crossroads. But she's very good and she can be very self-aware. So hopefully this is maybe the start of things to come. Who knows?
Well, yes. Who knows indeed? Though when I read Carey Mulligan, Britney Spears and Lips, I thought it was a completely different sort of story. Right. Thank you all very much for your contributions today. Esther McCarthy, Dean McGuinness and Fionnuala Jones. And that's it from us for today and for this week. Kieran's up next on The Hard Shoulder. And next, our production team today, Aidan McKelvey, Aisling O'Reilly, Philip Kelly and Annette Freeman. Have a lovely weekend.
Movies and Booze on Moncrief.
Brought to you by Lidl's award-winning wine range. Lidl, more for you.
Enjoy alcohol sensibly. Visit drinkaware.ie.